Welcome to the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is the one podcast where every single thing we do, say, and express aims, intends to set you up as the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Today's episode, I'm pumped and excited to speak directly to, it's a bit like the elephant in the room type scenario. It's the nine key reasons why women file for divorce. There's eye-opening statistics that I want to lead forward with this. I'll definitely set a safe and constructive context from where, you know, I invite you to approach this session. The statistics are quite startling. They vary cross-culturally, you know, around the globe, but in and around, 50% of marriages end in divorce. You know, quite clearly, it's one in two. It's deeply significant. The more startling results coming true is that 70 to 90% of all of these divorces are initiated by women. 90%, that finding I saw came from a study that found that 90% of the times when women file for divorce, it's like 90%, there's a 90% chance when those women are college educated. So I'm just like, I'm not saying that there's an absolute truth in it, but if your wife is college educated, maybe there's an additional risk there. Anyways, like, it's really starting. 50% end in divorce and 70 to 90% are filed by women. There's a certain point that women's nervous systems show up and feel into the lack of emotionality, the lack of love being felt, the lack of appreciation, the lack of safe communication. A woman's feminine core will show up and feel into that progressively over time. And it's like, women can be quite loyal in relationship, but they get to a certain point. And the reality check I really want to bake in for every single one of you powerful men listening in is this. We end up having, you know, a real, it's quite a catastrophic capacity to minimize and normalize, you know, certain lacks in relationship. We have this capacity as men to go, you know, I know what I was saying for, you know, in the lead up to my breakdown or breakthrough challenge in marriage, what, 3.5 years ago. If you asked me like four and a half years ago, it was like, oh, Mark, you know, how's your marriage going? And I had conversations with guys. My answer was sort of along the lines of like, oh, it's grand. Like, it's good. Like, I enjoy marriage. I mean, there's lots of positives. It's challenging and we have our challenges, but by and large, you know, it's like things are good. Things are on the, are looking and are on the up. I didn't realize the level of my blindness to how bad it was through the perception of my queen. I'd share with you a story here. And, you know, very often when you have the honor and the privilege of coaching, you know, powerful men from around the world and holding space in men's circles, there are incredible insights. And very often it's actually easier to learn vicariously, you know, looking on and hearing what another guy says is like, very often reflect back to me. It's like, wow, you know, I can see things clearly. It's like I learn it through somebody else. But I still remember this one example of a guy in, like, he came to me, I coached him 2 or 3 times and then that was it. He didn't want to take it any further. You know, he was sort of happy where he was at. But what was startling is this, you know, I asked him about his sex life, intimacy in the bedroom. It's like, you know, just where would you rate that? You know, 1 to 10. 1 is, you know, it's dead and in the water. I mean, it's non-existent. And 10 is like, you're like fucking, you're steaming hot. And he said a really immediate and confident, direct, oh, 8 out of 10. honestly, at the time, this is why I really remembered. At the time, myself personally, you know, like as you're coaching, or you'll know as you're relating with people, you'll have your inner commentary and then what reaches, what actually exits your mouth. My inner commentary at the time was almost like, oh, fuck. You know, it's like, I'm nowhere near an 8 out of 10. So there was almost like a part of me like disgruntled. It's like, oh, wow. You know, like 8 out of 10? Fuck. Well, like that's impressive. But then some part of my intuition, and I hadn't done this before that day, and I've repeatedly done this like countless times thereafter with men around the world. My intuition laid this to me. It's like, hey, okay, so 8 out of 10. Like, boy, like that's a pretty fulfilling sex life. And he was like, they're nodding, yes. My intuition laid this. It was like, hey, if your wife was in this conversation now, and I turned to her, and she was feeling completely safe to be radically honest, and I asked her the same question. It's like, put your level of sexual fulfillment in marriage on a scale of 1 to 10. It's like, where would your wife put it on the scale? And his answer, albeit there was a momentary gap, was like his face went blank, went almost white. He was like, 2. And that's probably being kind. She'd more than likely put it a 1 out of 10. To say that that changed the trajectory of that conversation is an understatement. And I've learned so many times since then that, you know, the answer that we will give so often, the vast majority of the time, we will, you know, overestimate the scoring of individual components and parts and areas of our relationship. As you're going through this, we're going to go through the 9 categories or the 9 main reasons why women initiate divorce. You know, I'll sort of ask you to self-reflect, but I will be asking you, is like, hey, if your wife was reflecting and was asking how you're showing up as a husband, as a lover, as a communicator in this regard, in this reason that women normally give for filing for divorce, I'd be asking you to reflect upon that. My invitation is to get really real. You know, I talk about humility, having that heroic humility coming from the word hummus. Those of you that have been following me, you'll know I come back to this because it's absolutely essential. No progress comes without baked in radical honesty and heroic humility to state where you are now, really, truly, stripping away all the minimizing, the normalizing, the justifications, the, you know, the giving your sort of sugar-coated version of the situation. It's like the old examples, like Google Maps, or, you know, you have your navigation system. It's an incredible tool. It can bring you to anywhere on the planet, but it's useless without knowing where you're starting off from. That's the most powerful metaphor. I had an experience the other day that it just, I wanted to bring it in, and it sort of points to it experientially. I was going up to my dad. We hadn't been up to him in quite a number of weeks. And as we were driving down to the junction, it was quite a frosty, it was freezing outside. So the inside of the car was sort of fogging up quite a bit. So I had to put my passenger window down to just see, was there traffic coming up the road at this rural crossroads. As we were just, you know, putting the window down and just approaching the junction, I actually heard this like gritty grinding sound coming from the front right-hand wheel. And I was like, whoa, Jesus, that doesn't sound so healthy. I'm not a very mechanically based-minded guy. So I was like, whoa, okay, it just doesn't sound very good. And I put the window back up and I got momentarily concerned about it. And like my wife said, it's like, hey, you know, it's like, we haven't, it's winter time. We haven't ever been driving with the window up. It's probably been sounding like that for quite some time. We're probably okay. So I got out to a local filling station, took a look in underneath, turned the wheel. It was driving perfectly, etc., etc. Yet, you know, that was a sign to my nervous system. It's like something is not right with the wheel. We made a judgment call. We did the hour and a half journey up, hour and a half journey back. I mean, it's pretty much sound, set and sorted. It's going through a roof. The yearly government review, mechanical review in, you know, 3 weeks' time. So it's going to be sorted. But there's an option there at any given point to go, okay, well, I just put the window up and ignore, like forget about that I've heard that sound and just chance it and just keep going, keep going, keep going till what? You know, the steering goes or the brakes go at a mission critical point and people get hurt. I mean, it can be literally quite catastrophic down to, you know, like it could just break down the side of the road or whatever. But like when you ignore the warning signs in your life, in your car, in your body health-wise, in your marriage, in your business, etc., you suffer consequences when you ignore the warning signs. The vast majority of men, this is like just baking in context here, the vast majority of men that end up with divorce papers slapped on their table, the majority of them feel like almost aggrieved because, oh, where did this come from? Like, were things that bad? Really, you know, the black box type analysis is there were plenty of signs. You were playing like you were oblivious to them, but they were there. So in this context here, I really invite you in your whole life, but within this episode, is listen in with the windows down. Listen down. Listen to the sounds of, you know, where your intuition goes, hey, like that point is striking home. There's a truth in that. It's uncomfortable. Like, have your eyes open and your ears, you know, your ear to the ground, looking for the signs and symptoms that, okay, I've got to look on the dashboard like a CEO. There's predictive variables that a CEO will know that like a business, you know, I need to adapt now or in 2, 3, 4 months time, this business is going to be suffering or this business is going to end. But do it in a way that, you know, it's free of blame, free of judgment, free of shame. This is deeply empowering, but only if you enter into it with an open-minded, open-hearted, shame-free approach that you're like, I'm going to be real and honest with myself, inviting in the sort of wife reflection. What would your wife say? With that, let's get into the first of the nine reasons. There's no order preference or priority, or it's not ordered in like the number one. They're just the nine. They can show up in many different ways. The first major reason why women file for divorce is lack of intimate communication and understanding. You know, for the feminine core for women, union in love is like the, you know, it's the reason for being in marriage. It's like a reason for being in life as well. It's just this immense, almost like mystical force driving them to connect and be in union. There's multiple other expressions of women as well, but this is like a real force of nature inside of them. Men, we have been conditioned. I went into the full details of this, so in other extended versions and multiple versions, multiple episodes. But men, we have been conditioned to fear our inner worlds and emotions, and we experience like a deep shame when, you know, guilt comes up, shame comes up, sadness, grief, you know, anger, aggression. For so many different reasons, that has been shamed out of us, you know, like being told to get the hell up. You're being a pussy when you were crying as a boy. To, you know, there can be lots of mother-son stuff where, you know, the because of a mother's, you know, wounded past with supposedly, you know, toxic masculinity, as it can be called, a very misunderstood term, but we put it there. A lot of the masculine traits can be shamed out of us. I just give a little peppering on it, but it happens. So we, as men, end up experiencing deep closure when uncomfortable shadow emotions come up. They're not wrong. their shadow emotions, challenging emotions, classically called negative emotions, don't like the term, but just to give you in that, like when they come up, it's like we go into shutdown and we feel like on a deep level we're failing, that we're just not allowed to express those. We're meant to have confidence, direction, be happy, be grounded, know, or like always be communicating that we've got our shit together on the external facade. So deep intimate relating is such a challenge to us, and like lack the lack of intimate communication and understanding of the feminine, the key issue and challenge in this is, as a husband, without going too much into the mechanism of this, I want to just keep it like these are the reasons, but just a little bit of depth behind it. There's a masculine, the primary masculine and feminine, and the secondary masculine-feminine relationship. The primary masculine-feminine, the masculine core, you, your conscious presence, that's the masculine core, and its capacity to hold space for your feminine, being the emotions and the feelings in your body. If you don't have a practice-trained capacity as a man, and 99.9% of husbands, men in deep intimate relationships, don't have anything of the emotional training to that level. If you don't have the trained capacity in your nervous system to be able to be consciously present with a high charge feeling, emotional charge of shame or anger, aggression, repulsion, deep desire, attraction, etc., etc., if you can't hold a conscious presence and be comfortable with that high charge of emotion, and from your comfort of being uncomfortable, it's like this paradox, you're comfortable being uncomfortable within your own nervous system, and from there you can hold, you know, the secondary masculine and feminine relationship is you're the masculine core. 90% of the time the husband, being the male, will hold a masculine pole predominantly. And if you can hold space for whatever emotional charge your woman is experiencing, and your woman is like, is experiencing her authentic self as her emotions unfold, the temporary storms come in, and you know, you can only hold space for what's happening for her in her authentic spontaneous expression when you can hold space and remain grounded and present and calm and assertive and confident as you hold space for your own emotional risings. 99.9% of guys haven't had this training. And thus, when our women bring us like feelings of shame or high flame, they give us feedback, but it's like quite, you know, like they're really angry, etc., etc. There's when they have feelings of rejection, and you'll know what happens. Like when I say this to guys, they're live in live conversation in men's groups, they'll be like, yeah, oh man, fuck. Like, wow, what a challenge. We go into closure, and we harden up. We go into closure. Our best attempts we will do. We'll try, and do you ever try and fix your woman's issues immediately? Like give her like a logical fix, and she doesn't want to go there because she's seeking to be felt, to be seen, to be heard. She wants her story, her authentic expression, to be felt into and empathized with. But we end up, because we're so uncomfortable with it, we incessantly just try and fix the situation, and we give them perfect fixes for the situation they're rationally speaking into the space. But it's an emotional feeling. They want to felt, heard, tuned in with. And we don't know how to do that predominantly. You know, my question to you is like, do you ever get uncomfortable with your woman's emotions? And again, do you ever find yourself trying to fix her issues? This is a real symptom of like a lack of ease with her emotionality. That a lack of ease with her emotionality is that doesn't allow us to experience intimacy. Into me, you see. That's what women are looking for. That we can hold space for their authentic rising, for what's real for them in a moment without being, you know, knocked off kilter, and that we can share our own intimate world with them, and that they get to feel this melting union together. That's like, it is a major one that's there. So there again, what's your 1 to 10 of that? Like of deep, intimate communicating and sharing and understanding between yourself and your woman, and your capacity to allow her into the depths of your inner world. You know, 10 being like it's open door access, full transparency. You can share space, you're unfuckwithable no matter what our emotional tidings is, or are you near down to one? And again, how would your woman rate your capacity? How satisfying would she report in a self-analysis of intimate communication and understanding in a relationship? Number two is this idea of growing apart. In all the different studies in preparation for this this episode, in writing it up, there was multiple different studies, so I sort of came with the overlapping categories, the different people. Growing apart, small gestures and reassurances that were missing. You know, look at love and appreciation like a little bit of water that you place on a houseplant to keep it alive, to keep it thriving on a daily basis. I mean, it's only a little bit of water. But that little bit of water is mission critical to that plant living. If you don't make the effort to just put a little bit of water, you botanical experts that, you know, whatever the type of plant is that you have to give it a little bit every day. You know, if you don't give the little bit of water every day and keep the, you know, the organism of that plant, that flower, thriving and fed and nourished with water, it will die. So you can sort of, very often as men, we downgrade and de-emphasize the little things. It's like, oh, you know, it's just this little thing. We treat it like a small thing. You know, the kiss, the cuddle, the gesture, the hand of the arm, the reassurances, the you know, the compliment of her woman, the direct expression of appreciation for how she's looking, what she's doing, what she's saying, her creative work. You know, the reassurance, oh, hey, honey, you're well able to write that book. You know, I've heard you mention it the last couple of months or over the years. Hey, let's just go for it. You're able. I believe in you. You know, we downgrade these things mentally as like they're just the small things, but we end up minimizing and normalizing to the point that we feel, you know, they're that small. Well, if you add them in or if you don't, they're small. They're that small. I mean, who's gonna notice? When we get caught in our head, so often men, we get caught in our head because there's been so much shaming of our emotionality. We don't go to our bodies below our chin. We keep it all on mental activity. And from a mental perspective, from a rational-minded perspective, it's so easy to just go, oh, look, it's not that important. And then we lose the habit that we might have had earlier on in relationships. Yet the emotional body of the feminine core of our wives, they're deeply in their body. Yes, they eventually get to the point where the pain of disconnection, the pain of all the small things going missing over time, they get hard. They eventually will shut down their hearts to your approach. That's a major sign. That's the point. When they get near that point or they're at that point, that's when divorce papers come. Probably they're thinking about divorce papers long before, because they're feeling the pain of you treating the small things as being just so unimportant that they might have mentioned it. And we can treat them as like that. They're nagging, etc., etc. Talking, oh, Jesus, you're going on. You're so reactive. I mean, it's just what? I didn't hug you after the thing, or I didn't, you know, say one thing recently, just to say about the small gestures. And for 12 years, I used to downplay in such, I have had to work through a lot of grief. I'm nailing it now. But to give an example recently, and as where I've learned to really listen to the feedback, my beautiful queen called me out on answering her. She was like, hey, you said, like, love you on the phone. And it's like, I was around my dad for a couple of days. She said, yeah, it sounded hard. And it was a part of my mind sort of going, hey, but I still said it. But she was, her emotional body felt it. She's like, Mark, normally, you know, I've gotten used to you in recent years. Like, you say, I love you. And it's like there's a feeling behind it. And it's just, when you said that a couple of times, it hurt me. It's like, love you. It was like a token gesture, love you, rather than your normal, grounded, really direct, felt, I love you. That was important to her. I could still feel like this part of my mind, a little bit prickly, a little bit, yeah, but I said it. I didn't speak that, but my mind was there. The old conditioning of downgrading, of making a small thing seem like it's ridiculous that she's even focusing on this. I've learned to just put that on the shelf. If it's important to your woman, you see her as your queen and you emphasize it. But this is focusing on, like, what are the reasons women want to hightail it out of marriage with men? It's this. We make the small gestures, and like impossibly small, to the point that we forget about, and we give them zero relevance, and that hurts them to the point at which, even if they love you, even if they have kids with you, they've like created a whole life, it's a major decision for a woman to file for divorce, but it's that important to them. Ignore it at your peril. And I jokingly put it there, it's like, with the plant metaphor, if you treat your wife like a cactus, you know, it's like, oh, here, like I did for years, and most guys end up unwittingly doing. You're just like a poor water, you know, every Valentine's Day and on her birthday and, you know, card at Christmas and the odd date night. If you treat your wife like a cactus, don't complain when she grows prickles. If she becomes like a cactus, she will emotionally and psychologically become like a cactus and grow prickles that will get you, like, their fuck off from me prickles all over her. And if she eventually seeks a man to treat her like a rose, you know, don't come back complaining if you have given up on the importance of the small things. Number three are money problems. The research is a little bit funny. I had some comparisons. Like one was like, oh, it's down number 13 on the list. I had like a prioritized list. My experience with coaching guys and with lots of money teachers out there, I saw quite a number of ones when I was researching. It's like, it's the number one reason for divorce. What I can say experientially, you know, statistically, men's groups, speaking with guys, coaching guys, and from quite a number of places in research, it's a definite biggie. Whether it's number one or not, but it's a substantial issue. I mean, the world we live in, it's like a profit and money dominated sort of culture. Whatever the philosophical arguments about that, it's sort of like a fact of the world we live in as it is and as it stands now. So if there are incongruencies, if there's wounds there, if there's poor communicating on the topic, if you get triggered on the topic and it ends up with communication shutdown between yourself and your woman long term, it can bring a definite rise, because it's such a common, it can be like this daily issue. It brings up a lot of triggering conflict. You know, think about, you know, financial incompetence. You know, in such a money-oriented culture, you know, I actually had to reflect on this. I big into podcasts and reading. And, you know, in the last year and a half, it just became really aware. It's like, hey, I'm not hitting my financial objectives, et cetera, business-wise. I looked at my bookshelf. I didn't have any books on money. I wasn't listening to business, marketing, you know, selling podcasts. I wasn't on the topic. And it struck me immediately as like, Mark, you're financially incompetent, because I just wasn't placing my attention and awareness on it. This pointed to major financial wounds in myself. I could speak on this topic just like for a full episode, but my own money wounds were causing me to dissociate on the topic of money. I wasn't emotionally and psychologically available to my queen on pretty much any conversations of money. And yeah, it was creating a disaster. But I do know, you know, this money wounds triggered money wounds. You know, if you didn't have a lot of money growing up, if your parents always argued about money, if there was lack, poverty, stress about money, your parents could have been super rich, but like maybe they didn't meet any of your attachment needs because we're always focused on money. So like you feel a deep sense of rejection when money comes up, etc., etc. There's this fog around the topic of money. Anytime that comes up and you have to have a sincere, grounded conversation on the topic with your wife, which is going to happen quite often, if you're not emotionally available, that's a major stress for your woman, and she'll feel it over time. And, you know, our wives, they want to feel security. Security comes from se curare, without care. They want to feel without care in the world, so they can be free to be themselves, to flow with life, to be a feminine goddess, to be relaxed. And from there, they bring their fullest gifts to the world. If you're not on the money, I was about to say, if you're not on the money, on the topic of money, I mean, that's quite a way to put on your woman's emotional system. Over time, it definitely can wear down. There's also unrecognized differences in money mindsets and spending habits. One key teacher I was listening, Ken Honda, he was making the difference that I'm oversimplifying it. I just went into two categories, but just to give an example, he's like, there can be fundamental differences that one in the couple can be more a spender type approach to money, and the other can be a saver. So, you know, there can be major judgments about, you know, that you could be a saver. You could like bring experience deep emotional security and lots of benefits by saving. You know, you put away, and your money, your wife could be a spender. She could like, you know, have no issues spending on meals out and spending on clothes and spending on things, even things for the family. It's not necessarily just on herself, but like she could like be way more free in the capacity to spend. And just the difference between that, unrecognized, unowned, unexpressed, without the capacity to speak about it consciously and like come together, when it's just mudslinging and, you know, insults and judgments, and it's not safe for anybody, well, then it can exacerbate that. You'll save more and your woman will want to spend more, or vice versa. You know, in my marital dynamics, my queen, she has a definite spending personality, or excuse me, saving personality. Myself, I like spending. I've had to consciously get better at saving and consciously not get triggered when my queen would question my spending, to come back more into integrated balance. But the baseline is I have more of a spender personality, and I've got to honor that and just get the communication flowing. So yeah, I just want to, there's so much more that could be spoken to it, but money problems. You know, if you're hitting home with any of that showing up in your relationship, does that be a source of conflict for you? Do you end up having arguments repeatedly on the topic of money with your woman? You know, that remaining unaddressed without you upskilling your capacity to communicate and get aware of your emotional wounding on the topic and being able to navigate it in a grounded way, that's a major reason why women file for divorce. Number four, when your needs not being met at home. What a contentious issue. You know, there's the house cleaning, dinner preparing, child nurturing, tidy myself up and look attractive when my husband comes in the door from work. Perfect housewife ideal that women for generations have been indoctrinated with. Like literally, there were advertisements, there were magazine cutouts, there was like, it was put out there explicitly, you know, this perfect housewife ideal. Of course, I was like, you know, historically, if you go in the US, you know, there's a lot of big influence in modern culture worldwide. That was very much 1940s, 1950s, and hence the 1960s, 70s, you know, women, the feminist movement, rightfully, you know, rebelled against that. Yet worldwide, and there's still a lot of conditioning on that. I'd speak to this further, but we were looking at the Avengers and different films from the Marvel series there as in our family movie nights. And there's a lot of, you know, the wives of the characters, the wife for the partner of Iron Man, and it was like the partner of, what's the other dude, Hawk, I think. But it's like, you know, it's like the wife that just does there. She supports unquestionably everything in the man's expression. The wife staying at home at Hawk, you know, it's like he's just going off to save the end of the world, you know, like massive, like 99.9% risk of dying. And she's just a supportive, unquestioning wife. I mean, there's a massive conditioning to be this ideal housewife and not give your man shit and not ever question his capacity to, you know, go free and wild in the world. So there's a big conflict within women. There's all of these Yet the kickback is, and like the emerging thing is that there's higher expectations on modern husbands, which, you know, in many senses, there's the modern women, our wives, you know, they rightfully feel that, like, they because now they're, a lot of times they're working outside of home, they have their financial independence, they have work to prioritize, which obviously, you know, takes a lot more of their time and attention. You know, 1950s, the housewife, like, that's what they had to do. So right or wrong, it was more, they were more able to do it. It's like, you know, in modern times, women have a lot more on their plate, which is good, it's brilliant, it's amazing. So clearly, there's a much greater need for support at home. A lot of guys, you know, good meaning, well-intentioned guys, myself included, we do more. And we do more psychologically, we're aware, I think definitely subconsciously, that we're doing more than our dads ever did, than the generation before us ever did. You know, we push the buggy, we babysit the kids, we feed the kids, we get up at night with kids when they're really young. We'll tidy up, we'll cook dinners, you know, etc., etc. But there can be, deep down, a sense of entitlement which is really triggering. Not to go into the depth of it, but like, my question to you is, like, finish this prompt, this sentence. At home, I feel a woman should. You know, and get really brutally honest with yourself. A lot of the times, there can be unquestioned beliefs and senses of entitlement as modern men that we bring. We've inherited them from, you know, the standard norms that we learned when we were younger with our dads and from society in general. It's like, oh, I feel a woman should, could be clean more often, or should order to keep the house in order, or should take a more predominant role in parenting, because women, it comes natural, that they're meant to be the nurturing part of the species. Whatever, there can be biases to there. I'm not going to argue right and wrong, but if they're there, they will drive a lot of conflict between yourself. If you have this husband entitlement and women have this, you know, this kickback from like a grievance of the generations, I'm not going to let it happen to me, what my mother had to go through and the women before me. That can be a melting pot. And when those two clouds collide and there's no communication, there's no awareness either side, needs not being met at home can be a definite reason. With one of the top 9 reasons why women file for divorce. So, it will serve you to become really aware how you're showing up in the household and creating awarenesses on that topic. Number 5, infidelity. It's like, on one level, you know, you almost go like, do we even have to, like, point to this? Infidelity being a reason to divorce. And yet, on another level, you know, husbands who end up, you know, unwittingly, and I call you sort of on that, it's like this massive subconscious shadow impulse to do something that your conscious mind knows just it's not the right idea, but your subconscious animal body just goes and does the thing anyway. You know, one thing to say is, like, you know, does a marriage, is it beyond rescue at that point? I mean, you can claw back, it has been done, but boy, you know, it's a cliff edge journey to safe footing. You really of all the different ones, well, there's some ones you don't want to get to the extreme of any of these, but, like, you know, a curveball, if you're playing a monogamous exclusive relationship as a shared value, you really don't want to go to this point. The reason why we end up risking this as men, you know, when there's zero sexual connection, or it's getting more and more complicated, and, you know, progressively as you go into marriage, when there's undealt with wounds and, you know, there's communication breakdown, it becomes a more and more progressively difficult emotional challenge to connect with our women. And when you don't have the emotional tools, you don't know how to communicate, you don't know what the hell is going on, and it gets less and less, and the more progressively the lack of sexual connection gets, the more tension there is between husband and wives. and you might feel shame, you don't want to go to therapy, etc., etc., etc. It builds. And our biological needs to release steam, to act on our sexual attraction to the opposite sex, etc., 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 it gets complicated. And we can be really tempted to seek a path of least resistance. It's like, man, it's just a disaster zone at home. The last 5 years, progressively, like it's hopeless. We can project blame on her. She's hopeless, or we can shame ourselves. It's like, I just don't know how to do it. I love her, but I don't know how to do it. And then the woman at the gym shows up, and then the secretary, and then the random person you met at a bar that you ended up, you know, flirting with outrageously. You know it's wrong, but there's some part of you that's enjoying it. Because why? You haven't experienced with your wife in months, or years, or decades. And there's no right or wrong. There's no shaming this, shaming on your wife, or shaming you, or shaming your marriage. But this can happen. You know, we have needs to feel wanted and desired by somebody of the opposite sex. So if it's not happening at home, it's a danger zone. My question to you, no right or wrong, you know, do you find yourself flirting with other women? No right or wrong. You know, it's like some guys conscious to feel this is okay. There's no right or wrong, but do you find yourself sort of outrageously flirting and really enjoying playing that game? You know, obviously, you know, when your wife is not around, you're traveling, you're out and away in business, in spontaneous interactions in your everyday. It can be sort of like a warning sign that you're meeting your needs in not such a constructive way to feel attraction, to feel appreciation from the opposite sex, to have somebody look at you, smile, you know, laugh at your jokes, etc., and you play to it. But it's a real warning sign that you're meeting your needs in a way that is not very constructive for your marriage. Another question direct, and like, answer this in the privacy of your own mind, but get real with yourself. Are you fantasizing about fucking other women when you're making love with your wife? You know, do you camp out there? It happens with a lot of guys. This was a major issue in my own relationship for years. I've owned up with my woman, like made good, etc. Learned progressively channel my energy in certain ways and bring it to the bedroom, bring it to the in how I relate with her. But it's another thing of getting real. It's no, there's no right or wrong with this. But again, our minds give us like a good reflection of where our energy is going. And if we end up camping out in our heads, there can be certain sexual expressions that we feel too cagey or frightened to express with a woman, and we camp out in our head, or there's just no sexual connection between. So you camp out in your head, and if you make love, you're camping out there. It's giving you objective feedback that there could be quite an issue in your sexual relating. There again, what's your scoring? You know, 1 to 10 in sexual relating. Where are you at with that? You know, have you cheated? Have you justified cheating with another woman, or have you been racked with guilt, but you keep going back, or you did it one time, etc.? No judgment, no shame, but just getting real with yourself. And I honor you during this. This can be quite an uncomfortable podcast, especially this topic, because it's like unapologetically putting the spotlight on, you know, key areas that you wouldn't classically put your awareness on. So I commend you, I acknowledge you for having the courage to listen in. Number six, I put the word hopelessness on this. There was a term, loss of love. You know, so often, and in some of these points I want to say, it's like women can be from the other side, you know, can be unwittingly be guilty of certain of these aspects as well. So, you know, they can be missing the mark as well. As always, here at the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast, we talk about taking extreme ownership of our 100%, leaving them to their 100%. Because I'm talking with you guys. I can't talk about her. So it's like, just deny any attention that's going there. But a lot of the time that I see, and I see in myself, is like, as men, as husbands, we see love as a noun. It's like an entity or an object. It's like it's there or it's not. And how you relate with the topic of love will determine how you can show up in a loving relationship. Whereas to love is a verb. You know, it's to love. If you look in a dictionary, you can find it as a verb. The only one of these two that really works for long-term, deep, intimate relating and marriage is to see love as a verb. When we see love as a noun, as an entity, it's like, oh, you know, the love just isn't there anymore. It's an inner attitude. We can end up feeling deep sense of grievance, of grief, that it's like, man, I loved her so much. And on a level, we can be like, but I still do love her, but it's like the feeling just isn't there. It's like it's not there anymore. And we can, even like from a conscious perspective as husbands, as men, you could go to a counselor, to a therapist, to your mates and go, man, I don't know. You know, it's just not there anymore. I mean, the love was there in the beginning. I mean, it was hot sex. It was amazing. We were so connected. But man, just, you know, and then we point and we point a finger to what has changed. You know, oh, then the kids came along and then the company. And then we moved home. And then when we moved home, like it was great for money and it was great for things. But it's like we're both working away and we're just less time together. And it's just like the love just isn't there anymore. We can feel it as husbands too. But it's like our women, there again, it's one of the main reasons why they file for divorce quicker or first. They will feel the loss of love quicker. And if it's not quicker, it's more intensely within their nervous system. Not better, not worse. It's part of their feminine gift that they bring, is this awareness. And one thing that really riles our wives up is like this idea that we brought a lot of love in the beginning. I say it quite often here, it's like women are looking for progress and presence. They're not looking for perfection. But in the beginning in relationship, you know, there was a lot of progress, presence. We were showing up, we were listening, we were paying attention. You know, like we come back in conversation. We were so attentive in the courting phase, in the beginning phase. And then it just dwindles over time. That's very hurtful for a woman. And at a point where it's like, oh, the love is lost. Like it's gone. There can be a panic mode in our women where it's like, it's just not there anymore. And they're not seeing, the important thing here is they're not seeing us take action. Because if we're coming from a perspective that love is a noun, it's an entity, it's either there or it's not. When it's lost, you're doomed. It should just be there. You know, we got married, the marriage vows, the whole thing, it's meant to be there. She's meant to be my woman, you know, as a wife. She should just love me. Why is she not just loving me? Why is she giving me all this shit? Because, you know, from all of these awarenesses or lack of awarenesses, you know, and then the love goes. But our women are not seeing us taking action. We're not proactively going at finding ways to express love, to show up more present and show progress, to show that like we're actually reading books about love, reading books about communication, reading books about sexual relating or podcasts, or we're not the ones suggesting and spearheading like let's transform the marriage, etc. They can experience such a sense of hopelessness that's like, okay, it's gone. He's not showing up anymore. It's like, I can love him. It's like, what am I getting? I'm getting nothing. And that sense of hopelessness that the love is just lost, it can be an insanely difficult choice for a woman. But again, it's a major reason why women file for divorce ahead of men. Number 7. Stick with me. We're at 7, 8, and 9. Coming into landing. Number 7. Substance abuse and addictions. For substance abuse exclusively by itself, 45% of women divorcing will cite that as a leading reason, the number one reason, or it's like a contributing factor. It's a massive amount. It's a big statistic. No right or wrong here, you know, from a trauma-informed perspective. Every addiction, when we use stimulants, alcohol, drugs, or we're addicted to like porn or gaming or, you know, social media, it's serving an emotional need. I want to just take shame out of this because it can be so triggering. Guys can, like, on this topic, guys can get like really defensive very, very quickly when being challenged on this. I want to just like state with that, like just create this pocket of safety. it's so understandable. From a trauma-informed perspective, there's some part of your nervous system that ultimately, and it's a part of every, I think most people have addictions, can have mental addictions, right or wrong, mental addictions to perspective. So it's like, you know, the people that judge other people that have external, visible, quantifiable addictions can be the ones that have the worst inner addictions to, you know, certain perspectives and ways of thinking. All of them are rooted in a need to meet emotional needs that we don't feel we're able to meet in and off and by ourselves. That's okay. That doesn't mean you're faulty. That means you're human. And you've grown up in an environment, in a society that didn't know how to nurture and like meet your attachment needs and your needs to be authentic. And a lot of it comes down to a fear that being authentic and being real, speaking your truth and showing your emotional truth, you know, being just like your real authentic self, that we end up our attachment needs. People will not love us anymore. That's like just really getting to the root core of it. So it's just bringing a human element to it. Now, that said, that does not mean that I'm like, hey, you know, there's an understanding behind it. You know, keep with the habit. Don't address it. I just want to bring like a safety there. But there's also a no bullshit black and white perspective, which is like, if, you know, how would your wife rate you on, you know, on your habits with substances, you know, which are drinking, which if it's smoking weed or other drugs, which are gaming, porn usage, etc., whatever your repeated things is, how would she rate you? How would she rate how that's affecting your marriage and your relationship? A real key question is like, do you get annoyed when your woman challenges you on certain behaviors like these? That's a key sign that there's a definite need to pay attention and find some perspective, some coaching, healing, trauma-informed perspective to work with this in a gentle but direct and effective way to, you know, take the weight off yourself for the suffering you can be having, but definitely in this context, to take the pressure off your marriage. This is a highly corrosive thing on trust and a capacity for your woman to feel, you know, she can trust you, that you're good, that you have a vision together. If you're constantly getting diverted and placing, you know, economic resources there, time resources there, your energetic resources there, etc., a lot of times it really diminishes your capacity to be present and to progress as a man. So that is why substance abuse is such a high reason for women to file divorce. So that's substance abuse. We've went hopelessness, loss of love, infidelity, needs not being met at home was number 4, money problems 3, growing apart, small gestures, reassurances are missing, and number 1, the lack of intimate communication and understanding. Just backtracking a little bit. Now we're moving on to number 8. Lack of romance. The good old romance. And it's like how triggered I was for years. My woman constantly reading. She still does. I just have gained a new appreciation of them. But these fantasy books. And the fantasy books and their depiction of romance and how these men had this undying love. They would lock in with their women. And it's like that was it. They were like, yeah, it just was all romance. And I felt so triggered by it all. I didn't know what romance was. It's like, what is romance? Like, well, there's so many different like definitions of it, but it's like, in the simplest terms, it's passion beyond friend-like closeness. And so often, in modern terms, I've spoken to this like it's the Mr. Nice Guy persona. We end up holding back our passion and our sexual desire and our desire to fuck our women and like to claim our women in like that primal animal body way that women find actually such a turn on. And just such a temptation to go into the whole topic. I feel very passionate because it has turned my whole sexual relationship and my relationship with romance with my woman around. But it's like we end up like ticking so many of the practical boxes as husbands. We mind the kids. Maybe we meet all the needs at home. we're good guys. We show up, bring the kids there. We bring the kids to school. We help the kids with the homework. Tidy up, do the domestics. Great guy. Does the DIY. Keeps the house clean. Provides finances. You know, is a friendly with everybody in your friend, in your wife's friend's connection, with her family, in-laws, etc., etc. Great guy. But we lack this primal, you know, desire, expression of desire. It's there, but it's just tucked away so far away that we've become disconnected from it. And we've become friend-like. That shows up in so many guys that I'm coaching one-on-one. It showed up in myself. One of the great griefs that my wife had was for so many years, like this lack of romance. She's so fulfilled now. She still gives me feedback. Boy, she's fulfilled because I acted with feedback. She's constantly giving me feedback on a daily, weekly basis. Like, and there's anytime there's a lull for a couple of days, she's going to be hot on it. But I'm really enjoying that part. And it's like, what can happen is we go from the dating phase. You know, guys, undoubtedly, you brought a certain sense of romance in the beginning. The dating phase, the courtship, you know, getting to the point of engagement. I mean, you kept your romance alive. There was date nights. Like, there was nice messages. You might have even written her a couple of love notes. You know, emails, etc. Going on holidays. Spontaneously going on adventures, trips together. There tends to be a lot of romance in the beginning. But then it shifts to housemaid phase. It's like, oh, even like women, if they hear that, they'd probably want to slap me for even using that. But it's like this, you know, she's doing the domestics. We're doing the domestics. Can we just get along? But there's no passion in the love life. There's no romantic gestures during the day. There's no spontaneous romantic gestures outside. It's like, you know, you might do a date night, or you leave it till, heaven forbids, you leave it to just like the once a year, you know, the old classics. You know, Valentine's night, her birthday, holiday, you know, at Christmas. But in between, it's like you barely tend to it at all. You mightn't even tend to it fully on those and on those days. Again, you know, our women are classically, like, they're the first to file for divorce, the majority, 70-90%, but probably, and there could, I don't know if there's a direct link here, but the vast majority of the times, women, our wives, are the first to lose interest in sexual relating. And so often it's because the romance is just not there anymore. They don't like the whole, oh, like, not being tended to, not being made feel like they're unique and special, that they're the one woman on the planet. You know, like, that sense of, like, reverence and devotional love, where it's like they're made known regularly, like, you're the one. I claim you as my lover, as my woman, as my queen, etc., etc. There's nothing near that. That hurts. So when they're not being romanced, they lose interest in sex. As men, we pretend we can just show up and, like, initiate sex every now and then, and that'll just be fine. We meet our, you know, needs, and it's like, no, it's just not good enough. So lack of romance can be a definite reason, and is a definite common reason why women file for divorce. Number 9, physical and emotional abuse. My challenge to every single one of you listening in is, I know for me and for different guys, again, in coaching, that this can be one that we can just beeline and go, I'm not physical and emotional abuse, because we can sensationalize it. You know, it's like, I'm not like the guys on TV with the wife beater vest that beats his woman and, like, shouts horrendous abuse at her. You know, it's like, I'm not such a guy. I'm a good guy. I really invite every single one of you to open your minds and hearts and entire nervous system to this topic. Maybe there's physical abuse there and you're like, oh my, you know, like, maybe some of you, and, like, I'm not saying that's okay, that physical abuse is okay, or emotional abuse, but it's like, that's okay. You know, the only way to stop a pattern is by consciously recognizing, yeah, it's there. Okay, I've got to admit, you know, listening to the podcast, it's just, it's come up. that's okay. That's a good sign. You know, if that's the first awareness that allows you break a pattern, and very often emotional and physical abuse patterns, they're inherited, they're handed down from generation to generation. So if this bringing this topic to your attention is like your first step to becoming aware and breaking that cycle, not only is that okay, that's to be celebrated. It's to be taken sincerely in a shame-free manner. So it's a definite thing. However, if maybe some of, like, if it's not a immediately, like, I'm not so extreme in that, or you might like discount it as being relevant to you. The elephant in the room is so many guys are definitely from the emotional abuse perspective, like catastrophically unaware that they are actually emotionally abusing their woman a lot of the time. For myself, man, I was like really unaware of the amount of emotional abuse I was creating. I was making my queen experience for so many years. Again, deep grief for realizing the amount of different strategies I was using to avoid feeling my own shame, my own inadequacy, my own, you know, shit in relationship. I would communicate in a way that would, to defend myself from feeling my inner depth of shame and fears and inadequacies, I'd make her feel it. It was such a pattern that was etched into the system, I didn't realize the depth of impact it was having. Now, again, 100%, 100%, there can be emotional abuse like being flung both sides. That was definitely relevant in my relationship. That's okay. My only way of stepping out of it, like to speak to it, was taking 100% ownership from my side and completely stopping, you know, my queen has only started taking feedback from me when she has seen a consistent period of time when I was taking extreme ownership from my side. Then I could give feedback and go, hey, see that way of like name calling? I'm not taking that anymore. And she takes that feedback now. Why? Because I'm actually that emotionally grounded. A lot of time, a lot of work to get here. But it's like, I encourage that in guys, but it's like you start with 100% ownership your side. So on this topic, you can be like, oh yeah, well, I mean, we both slingshot and sling mud either side, and we both get emotionally abusive. Don't avoid it that way. That is not an escape door. Like, I encourage you, come back. And what's your 100%? Like, if I was having a powerful conversation, one-on-one coaching with you in the deep men's group, I wouldn't want to know any of the details of what she puts your side. It's like, what are you not taking ownership for here? And a lot of the times it's like, you know, complaining, criticizing your woman, blaming her. And sometimes, you know, comparing her to other women, or other people. Oh, you know, you could be like that other one. It's an insulting name calling. It erodes self-esteem over time. And as a result of you doing that, you know, it comes back to you. She will have her version that comes back to you. And in that tit-for-tat roundabout sort of thing, we can justify our defenses, our offensive like ways of insulting, because she does it to me. But like, where does that pattern end? And yeah, women can give it back. But here's the thing on this topic. It's like, it's a major reason why they reach a point where it's like, enough is enough. It's enough. I can't take this anymore. So the major risk is you just camp out and blame your woman, not taking ownership and going, oh, well, she's doing it to me as well, etc., etc. But if it's a major reason why she would file divorce against you and just like, go, enough is enough. This is my way of permanently breaking this pattern. I'm just going to get rid of this guy. Get him out of my life. I find an easier one is just like, own it. It might feel intense. You might know how to actually do it yet. But the first step is becoming unapologetically aware. A major one is aggressive outburst. You know, the nice guy persona, we've been shamed so much. We end up suppressing our anger. Frustration builds and then volcanic explosion, you know, hits your wife as an aggressive outburst. It's a majorly common one. So I open your awareness on that too. You know, is it emotional abuse? Well, if she's not feeling safe around you, if she has to second guess around you, what can she say? What can she not say? How can she behave? she can get nervy at times about your emotional stability, there's going to be emotional abuse there, you know, by definition in some places. It's no excuse. Like, if you feel that it's a low level, again, a bit like the beginning, like the guy, he underclaimed where it was at on the severity list. This is a definite one where women will come in and go, hey, you're at a 6 or 7 or an 8 out of 10. No, you're at a 10 out of 10, and you're thinking that you're way down the list. If you're recognizing in any way, shape, or form certain signs where you're like, yeah, I could be, you know, I'm a bit erratic, I get reactive at times, you know, call it for what it is. It's unwitting emotional abuse, but it's emotional abuse. If you ever, you know, on a regular basis in conflict in certain situations, communicate in a way that, you know, you're putting your woman down, you're insulting her, she's feeling poor and bad the far side of an interaction with you, that's an emotional abuse. Just fucking call it as it was. You don't intend, cool, that's okay. That's not my intention. Oh God, I really don't want to be doing that. That's okay. But that's not an excuse. Call it for what it is. This is getting real, guys. I want to get real with you and speak direct in this episode because I want to serve you. Like, be the husband she brags about. What's the ultimate thing? My ultimate thing is I want every single one of you to be able to show up like as the husband she brags about, as the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. But the deeper thing is, like, it's that mantra, better husbands today, better world tomorrow. You know, the more divorces, the more separation, the more division, the more disconnection that we fuel and gift as our legacy to the generation comes after us, that's not a better world tomorrow. At some point, we've got to, you know, be the husband, be the man that says enough is enough. This pattern stops with me. Doesn't matter what you were gifted in childhood. It doesn't matter the embodiment of your dad, your stepdad, your mom, the craziness. It doesn't matter. It's on nobody. It's all on you. You can rebel against this. You can say, that's unfair. Man, feel free to drop off, find a different, like, less high flame, a soft little podcast that will do a little bit of inspirational, motivational shit. You can feel good and make no change in your life and in your marriage. If you want that, like, that's okay. I'm fine. I'm here. My marriage is lovely. It's amazing. It's thriving. It's really challenging, but it's thriving. I mean, I was in the absolute shitter. Guys I work with have been in the shitter. They're coming out the far side. I mean, make your decision. That's okay. But don't, you know, it's a choice. Like, coming back to the metaphor of the car and, like, hearing, you know, the sign of objective data that is suggestive that my car was going to break down. It's a choice to put the window back up and just ignore it. Just ignore it. Just ignore it and take the risk. My encouragement here is for the whole lot, and if you listen back to it again, like many of you do, is, like, do it with the windows fully down and listen to, you know, if there's signs and symptoms of a potential divorce coming your way, listen to those signs. Look at them. Unapologetically look at them. Permeate your nervous system with them. Not from a sign of, oh Jesus, I'm all anxious now. Jesus, like, she could be filing the divorce tomorrow morning. It's like, no, don't do drama. Hold your ground, hold your structure. Like, that practice as the masculine core. Be present to it. If emotions come up, hold space for them. It's okay. It's not that it's wrong to have anxiety or it's wrong to feel a bit of panic. It's like, cool. If you actually take it as a sign of, you know, there could be something there to take powerful, potent action on. But don't panic. Sit with it and take it as wisdom of your nervous system that's telling you, hey man, you need to take action on this. You know, you need to take this car to the mechanic and get a whole check and get, like, you need to upgrade what's happening with your vehicle. And, like, your vehicle is not you. Your marriage is not you. It's another encouragement to see that your marriage is like an entity. It's not your wife. Your marriage is not your wife. We can actually project that our marriage is our wife. It's our wife's rejection. It's her bad moods. It's her whatever. Her face that doesn't smile and doesn't laugh to her jokes anymore. It's like, she's our marriage. No, it's not. your marriage is not your wife and your marriage is not you. Your marriage is this entity. It's like a living organism, an energetic, invisible organism that exists as you relate with your beautiful wife. If there's signs and symptoms in this 1 to 10, lack of intimate communication, growing apart, money problems, needs not being met at home, infidelity, hopelessness, substance abuse and addictions, lack of romance and physical and emotional abuse, if there are signs and symptoms that are coming to your awareness that, you know, this, the organism that is your marriage that exists between yourself and your beautiful wife, just see it objectively, going, okay, I've recognized that there's two or three of these ones, or there's one that is really jumping out. That's a major one. Or for a lot of you, if you're being really honest, there's going to be quite a number of them that you're like, yeah, that's nowhere near being ideal. I've got to take action on this. Get real with yourself. I really, unapologetically, actually with massive excitement, want to point all of your attention towards the marriage transformation journey that's happening. Marriage transformation journey that I'm launching in the next 3 or 4 weeks. It's going to be actually lined up. The launch date is in time for, it's in the week of Valentine's Day. I mean, it happened actually by default. It was like I was getting the setup behind the scenes, and I said it to my wife. We have a once a week sort of CEO life family ecosystem meeting on a Monday. I said it to her last week. It's like, oh, she was asking me, it's like, when's the launch day? And I told her that week, I think it's the 18th of February. She's like, oh, you know, Valentine's Day. She also, she saw me, she was like, you didn't know it was Valentine's week. I was like, oh shit, I didn't. So she gave me, putting me back in my place, just this is what happens. This is what happens when you coach and you have a podcast and all this. This is what your queen gives you back. She's like, you're teaching this shit to other guys? How can you teach this shit to other guys and you don't even know when Valentine's week is? It missed my awareness. I had put the date down. So yeah, I think my super quick instinctual response was, hey baby, I forgot it was Valentine's Day because every day is Valentine's Day around here. She like nearly threw up in a bucket when I said that to her. Anyway, by timing, it's coming up. It's launching Valentine's week. I think it's the Thursday the 18th. Well, it's launching before that. That's the beginning date of it. It's going to be launching 2 weeks before that. But you're going to be setting your marriage in motion Valentine's week, a powerful, potent time to do so. My invitation is to put yourself on the waiting list. You know, the journey is going from feeling frustrated, overwhelmed and incompetent to being the confident, attractive and radically alive husband she will love, laugh and let loose with. AKA, as I say, be the husband she brags about. My invitation, you can find the link in the description in this episode. Get yourself on the waiting list. You're going to get incredible benefits jumping on the waiting list immediately. Take immediate action. There's a 15% price discount. When it's launched, you're going to be ahead of the game. Get in there first. But the main thing is you're going to be first in line. This journey is only available to a small, exclusive group of men. Of the increasing numbers coming in, there's only going to be a small, small group. I am absolutely, the whole aim is to like bring you through a marriage transformation journey that is going to be incredible. It's happily ever after type shit. So I want to be, I'm setting it up consciously that it's just a small bunch of guys and there's only going to be one marriage transformation journey in 2023. So putting yourself, taking action immediately when this episode ends, click in the link, put yourself in the waiting list, you get the price reduction, you're first in line. And I mean, where could you be in a year's time? In 6 months' time, at the end of that program, like into the first couple of weeks in that program, in that journey, where can you be with your wife smiling at you? Where would your communication be? Where, when you systematize this and you show up and you get the coaching and the accountability and the training and all the information, it's just all to creating a beautiful connection in your marriage and sexual connection, attraction, and by default, where could you be? And how valuable how invaluable, how priceless is that? I know the transformation for myself. It's been night and day, the before and the after. I mean, from my own marriage transformation, it took me longer. I've learned so much along the way, but I want to create this journey that you can get it in the most highly condensed manner and just apply it in the most high leverage way. That is just it guarantees you're riding off into the sunset, happy ever after. Put yourself in the waiting list. Take action now. Wishing you a wonderful, amazing, kingly day. Always reminding ourselves the point and purpose why we show up here. Because better husbands today, better world tomorrow.